Welcome to Best Picture This, where it is always Oscar season. I'm Mike.
And I'm Brian. In this show, we reevaluate every Best Picture nominee from the 21st century and decide whether to keep it or kick it from its Oscar pedestal.
And today is another Keeping and Kicking Spectacular, our series finale in which we review the films of 2009 and pick our definitive top fives of the year. Everything
definitive?
Else. Definitive, because everything
else... Never can change again.
No, this is final, and everything else will be destroyed.
I'm pretty sure, as I've learned, that every one of my top five lists eventually changes.
They change, yeah. But this year, it's definitive.
All right,
definitive. So just get in that zone. And in 2009, we have 10 nominees to choose from instead of
five.
Will
you please list them rather than just skipping over this part every time?
Because it's the review,
okay, thank
I'll,
you.
I'll list them for you. The thank nominees you. For Best Picture were Up in the Air, Up, District 9, Precious, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, The Blind Side, A Serious Man, Avatar, and An Education.
You only gave part of the title.
I'm not going to read the whole Precious title. It's too long.
You knew I was going to say that.
Yep.
Coming up in this finale of 2009, we're going to reorder those five. Then we're going to ask questions, talk trivia, and then the grand reveal. Personal top fives of the year, maybe some other Oscar kicks. How would you reorder? Well, we can't really reorder the whole 10.
Why not?
Well, Did I? Actually, yeah, I did reorder the whole 10. Did you?
I reordered the whole 10.
There you go.
Yep. But I will say the, I'll get to a little, an issue that I had.
Okay.
Okay. So my number 10, easy, The Blind Side.
Same here.
Number 9, you're going to disagree with me, Avatar.
Mm.
Number 8, I went An Education. Number 7, I went Precious based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
By Sapphire, yep. Now I know which one you're talking about. Okay.
Number 6, A Serious Man. Number 5, I went The Hurt Locker, the year's winner.
Hmm.
Number 4, Genre, District 9. Number 3, here's where I got a little bit confused. I went Up in the Air.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about going Up, but I decided Up in the Air with Up as my number 2.
Up number 2, nice.
And Inglourious Basterds for my number 1.
Hmm. Not too far off, actually. I mean, Avatar I had higher, but I went number 9, Blindside. Number 10, Blindside. Mm-hmm. Firmly at the bottom of both of our lists.
That was easy.
I had Precious as number 9, although I do like Precious, but this time around, there's certain things that I just had a hard time with.
Yeah.
I had an Education above that on a different day. Mm-hmm. I would flop those. Then I had District 9. I had Avatar as number 6. No, is that number 6? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, so it didn't quite make my top 5 for the reordering even. So I want to say, I wonder if Avatar actually suffered in my list from me watching Avatar 2. Maybe it felt like, okay, I just spent 3 hours in Pandora.
Yeah.
And now, like a couple weeks later, I watch Avatar 2 in the theater, and now I'm kind of feeling Avatar'd out, and it kind of sinks a little bit below. So I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of a
I could see it. Of
a fatigue factor that's settled in there.
I could also see Avatar suffering from just watching it at home rather than watching it on the big screen in 3D.
But I watched Avatar 2 in the theater.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Okay, so Avatar was my number 6. The Hurt Locker was number 5.
Same with me. Okay.
Definitely a bit, you know, obviously there's a lot of reordering. I had Up as number 4, Up in the Air number 3, A Serious Man number 2, and Inglourious Basterds number 1. So we agree on the number 1.
Yeah.
A Serious Man went from 2 on my list to 6 on yours. So that's a pretty big disagreement. We both had high opinions of Up in the Air and Up. I mean, not to. What do you call that? No pun intended?
No. Or, I don't know if it's a pun.
It's not really a pun. High opinions of Up in the Air and Up.
Yeah.
You know.
We were high on Ups.
You had a much higher opinion of District 9 than I did, although I did like it. The only one I really just almost wish I didn't see is The Blind Side. The other ones, I there's some real high highs in Precious, even.
Yeah.
I mean, Monique is great.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Monique kind of saved it for me in a way. You said that.
And Mariah Carey.
Well, I don't know. You said that I think with Avatar or in education, there were certain things that kind of bothered you about it. And yeah. I think that's a running theme through all of this.
Yeah, I know. This year's. But here's the thing. Everything. No movie is perfect.
No. But you have 10 nominees.
So why am I...
So there should be a pretty good chunk of them that
how much do I hold a flaw against a movie?
It's depends kind of how big the flaw is.
Yeah.
So... We've now covered 10 years
we have
of film. Actually, 11.
11 including 99.
1999.
That was supposed to be our practice round, but we counted it.
Yeah, you know. So where would you rank this year? You don't have to give me a specific number, but in comparison to the others, would it be top third, bottom third, middle?
I would definitely say bottom third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You think so too?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're going to talk about our decade finale, and it was interesting where... These movies ended up in my thoughts of the top, you know, movies of the decade. I would say that Inglourious Basterds was really the only one that was like a real contender to be in my decade tops. You know, but
yeah.
As far as like, what are the potential, like truly great movies? Like not just like my, you know, I love this movie from the year, but one of my favorites ever, that's the only one that seemed kind of like possibly in that category. But
yeah, and even if we go more micro and look just at this year, Inglourious is kind of the only one that I felt like it's a lock.
Yeah.
It's in because I really liked Up in the Air a lot.
Yeah.
I kind of love Up.
So,
but still, I feel like on a better year, if they were my six and seven, I wouldn't be upset about it.
I don't think Up in the Air would always make my, you know, my list there, but.
In this year.
But Inglourious Basterds, though, I think would make pretty much any year.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. So we have officially now reordered the Oscars. You're welcome to the Academy. And so do we have any questions for each other? I have one question for you.
I asked you my question.
Did you?
With top third, bottom third, middle. Oh, okay. Where do you rank this year in comparison to the rest?
So here's my question. Mm-hmm. Best war movie of 2009. I mean, we both thought Hurt Locker was a top five of the Oscar nominees, but mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched these, but I also watched The Messenger and Brothers.
I've seen them both before. I didn't rewatch them for this series.
Yeah, not recently. So anyway, those are the three that kind of, I thought about all those three kind of together because they're war movies, same year. Just wondered from your recollection about The Messenger or Brothers, Hurt Locker. Do you feel like the Hurt Locker is clearly the best one, or did you like the others very much, or what were you?
I like The Messenger a lot. Mm-hmm. I remember liking Brothers, but thinking it's a little much.
Yeah,
you know they go heavy on the melodrama in that one.
Yeah,
Hurt Locker. It's got that whole thing that we talked about where the movie is so focused on kind of guys doing their job, mm-hmm. which I like because it takes out a lot of that. Unnecessary heightened drama that, you know, calls attention to itself, which I like, which I think is a strength of the Hurt Locker because mm-hmm. you get it, but it's kind of buried a little bit. The Messenger too. The Messenger is more of a character story.
It is. And there's a really interesting job, you know, like they're going on a job to go and notify the next of kin. And there's a lot of details, how to do the job, how to do it well, the pitfalls of the job.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. And then Brothers almost feels kind of like a genre movie, but also with the loudest message, you know, because it's mm-hmm. like war messes you up. You're going to turn into Dark Spider-Man. This is like him in Spider-Man 3 when he had the black suit. It gets bad.
Hey, Toby is Toby Maguire, I think, has some pretty great scenes in Brothers.
You know, I love Toby.
I think that Brothers had the biggest. Was swinging for the fences the hardest. And I kind of like that about Brothers. Like, it set it up to be like the most dramatic possible situation where mm-hmm. like you're going off to war and then your jerk brother falls in love with your wife. And not only that, but your wife falls in love with him. And it's like, it couldn't be any worse. And, you know, I'm not just going to like yell and scream and get mad. I'm also going to just smash the kitchen, you know, but I don't know. There's something about that swinging for the fences that I thought I kind of liked. So, and there was a moment in Brothers where I thought, like, this is a spoiler, so I'm sorry. You can pause it, go watch Brothers, come back. But in Brothers, Tobey Maguire's character threatens to kill himself. He has a gun to his head at one point. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I wasn't really sure what he was going to do. And I always think in a movie, when you're unsure of a key late in the movie decision that a character is going to make, there's some character development and some plot development that is admirable if you can pull that off. So anyway, I thought Brothers is maybe, I don't know. It's kind of flawed. It's kind of over the top, a little melodramatic, mm-hmm. feels a little too perfect in certain ways that are not really pleasing, but yet it kind of pays off in other ways that is very disturbing. It doesn't just give a neat, tidy, happy ending or anything. And
I guess there's your example of flaws that yeah. don't really matter quite as much. You know,
well, it's not going to make my top five.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like one of my favorite movies, although it had some very memorable things like stuck with me still. I watched it probably a month ago or something. Mm-hmm. Still kind of thinking about it every now and then. Out of these three movies though, The Hurt Locker, The Messenger and Brothers, I would have to say, because again, I watched them all in about a month, I would probably want to see The Hurt Locker again out of those three if I had to watch another one of them.
Yeah.
I'm kind of still wrestling with what actually happens to him when he sees, you know, the boy who he thinks, you know, is the kid that he was playing with and everything. What exactly happens to him there? And I think that there's some mystery that kind of deserves further kind of exploration. And I also think with The Hurt Locker has some of those scenes, like, you know, when Jeremy Renner is in the big suit and he's pulling up on the rope in the sand, and there's like six bombs that kind of start to get tugged out of the rope, out of the sand together. And you just realize, like, I'm in 10 times worse situation than I thought I would be.
And just great surprising visuals. Yes. I mean, that overhead shot where you see those bombs underground kind of surface slowly through the sand. That's great.
It's great stuff. And Catherine Bigelow, I think, was pretty deserving of Best Director for that movie, even though it wasn't my favorite movie of the year. So anyway, that's my question.
All right. So let's get into personal top fives. And before we do, you mentioned a few other ones that are probably not going to make your top five. And I thought it'd be helpful to offer some extra context on the year. We don't usually do this, but I thought there are a lot of name brand movies that come out each year that maybe we don't do an episode on or whatever. Yeah. They don't get recognized. And if you're not going through these years like a weirdo like we do, and you're just listening to this, you probably want the extra context. Yeah. So in 2009, also some movies that came out. The Hangover came out this year.
Yep.
Big movie, made a ton of money.
Big movie.
I Love You, Man came out this year. Taken, Liam Neeson's weird action star return. Star Trek remake came out this year.
I didn't rewatch it, but I thought when I saw that at the first time, I was like, that was the most fun movie that I've had in a long time.
Same. So, but I had no desire to rewatch it this time. So it's not going to make my five, mm-hmm. but at the time when it came out, it did the job great.
Yep.
Watchmen also came out this year.
I still haven't seen Watchmen. It's on my Netflix list.
It's fine. Adventureland, which was a good one. Julie and Julia, which is a good one. The Informant. And Black Dynamite, which I saw in this small theater in Orlando in college. And I loved it so much, I almost never want to see it again because it was like this magical theater experience. You're scared that
it'll be bad this time?
I don't think it'll be bad, but I have a kind of clear memory of the movie in my mind. I'm sure I would enjoy it again, but I just had one of those experiences where like the theater was all just vibing on this movie in unison. And it was really funny and really great. So I almost never want to watch it again, but Black Dynamite, 5 stars.
Gentlemen's? I still don't even know what gentleman's 5-star mean. Does that mean that you're being nice to it, or does that mean that like it's a highbrow 5-star?
It just earned. What does that even mean? It, you know, it just earned a gentleman's 5-star. It's holding a cocktail. Maybe it's that wearing a smoking jacket. Question. That's all you need to know.
Another one from 09 that I like. So Where the Wild Things Are.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Eggers helped write it. Catherine Keener, BPTGIE certified.
Certified. Officially.
So at first I was really kind of annoyed by the movie because I do not think the lead, the kid, really is like, I mean, he's supposed to be kind of bratty from the book, the Murray Sendak book, which is one of my favorite children's books ever. But he's just not likable. And you're stuck with him for so long, you know, like, I don't really want to hang out with this kid and how he's acting. But as it goes, and there's this really just weird relationship with these wild things. And
who are also childlike, but also very strong and dangerous.
Yeah. Like there's one moment where, Max, the kid tells the, I think it's Carol. And who's that?
James Gandolfini.
James Gandolfini. Mm-hmm. So he tells him that the son is going to die. And James Gandolfini's big-headed, you know, Muppet-like character is like, what? No, that can't be. Mm-hmm. And I like the emotion in there was so spot on. It worked so well for me right there. And there's a bunch of moments like that throughout the movie that the more I got into it, I just like, I liked it more and more as I went. Didn't make my top five, but it was kind of a memorable movie for me.
Yeah.
Another one is The Road, which didn't make my top five. Hmm.
You like The Road?
But I liked Viggo Mortensen. I love the book. Mm-hmm. That's really the big draw for me. There's a few moments in it that like don't hit as hard as the book did. And so I'm very much against that saying like the book is always better than the movie. I don't really believe that's true at all. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I really felt like the book was better. So it was a little hard for me to judge the movie, honestly.
And kind of a tough watch.
Yeah,
it is. It's just a hard sit.
Yeah. And actually the book has some more lighter moments in it than the movie did. And the movie was just like really, really, you know, pretty grim and grisly the whole time.
Oh yeah.
But still, what's his name? Shoot. I wish I should have this in front of me, but the kid, Cody Smith McPhee.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And Viggo Mortensen. I mean, great pair there. And then Charlize Theron is the wife, who is all in flashback in the book. She's not in the book, like hardly at all, a little bit here and there. And I'm like, okay, so they paid Charlize Theron to be this amazing, you know, wife character. And then they had to really play her up throughout the movie. And it just, I don't know, the tone of it was just a little bit different from the book enough to where it's like, no, this is violating the book. which apparently shows how much I like the book. Definitely didn't feel that way with like No Country for Old Men. I thought the movie is actually way better than the book. In part because I think Cormac McCarthy wrote the book almost as a screenplay and it doesn't depart nearly as much and kind of sets it up to be a great movie. Hmm. So anyway, those are some, and there's a couple others I was going to mention, but you know, they might be in your top five. So I guess I'll wait and see.
We'll go into honorables afterwards. Don't worry. Don't
we just
worry.
Did honorables.
Yeah, I guess so. Those are like pre-honorables.
All the ones that made your top five that aren't in mine, I'll say they're honorables, I suppose. I'll throw you a bone there.
We're going to cite a lot of titles this episode, but my top five are actually all movies that we've done episodes on before. Okay. So I can make this pretty quick and easy. Okay. And I'll just start by saying I'm very happy with my number one. My number two is a gentleman's five star. So I got to be happy about that.
Gentleman's meaning what exactly?
It's a gentleman's five star. But the three to five in a stronger year could have been a huge shakeup.
Yeah.
So my number five, I went with Up in the Air. Big fan of Clooney. Yep. The timeliness, Reitman style, all good. Four, I went Up. First time I put an animated movie in my top five on this show.
Well done.
I know, right? Number three, 500 Days of Summer, which I have an unhealthy personal relationship with. Number two.
It's a great movie to have an unhealthy personal relationship
100%.
With.
100%. Yeah, that's the whole point of it, I think. Number two, I'm going Coraline. So this is now two animated movies in my top five.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not sure how I feel about that, but these are two of my favorite animated movies ever. Huh. So I think if there ever was a year to have two, this is it. Especially Fantastic Mr. Fox came out this year.
I know.
Crazy year that for was animation.
That was worth watching. I mean, it didn't make my top five, but it was...
Two stop motion movies in a year, that's got to be a rare thing. Mm-hmm. And then firmly and easily number one, Inglourious Basterds.
Yep. Summer, Big fan of it. Didn't make my top five, but I really like it. I like taking the risks. I love Han Solo showing up in the reflection of Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep.
And just perfect casting.
Definitely.
Know, yeah. With Zoe Deschanel and JGL.
JGL.
Now you're supposed to say it if you're like cool in the movie business.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed that just rolled right off your lips. So you're there. So my top fives, number five also is Up in the Air.
Okay.
Again, big, great George Clooney movie.
Great one.
Is that his like most natural role? Maybe. I mean, he's kind of too cool and he discovers somewhat that he's too cool. But you're kind of rooting for him to stay too cool the whole time. I don't know. I just really like George Clooney in this movie.
It's the perfect movie for his movie star persona.
It is.
And this and Michael Clayton came out in such close proximity. And it's like, this is the Clooney wheelhouse.
Did Michael Clayton make my top five? Because it's definitely a top five worthy movie.
It's worthy.
That was a 2007 casualty if it didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because that was such a strong year.
Yeah. In this year.
And this year,
it probably would have.
Oh, definitely. I might put Michael Clayton number two on my list out of the ones I have because I really liked it. But poor Michael Clayton didn't quite get there.
Poor Michael Clayton.
Another Tony Gilroy collaboration is my number four, State of Play. Again, personal relationship with it.
Unhealthy.
I love journalism mystery movies. It kind of goes. Maybe it's because it reminds me of All the President's Men, but I love the, you know, Russell Crowe is just, I don't know. I would say he's too big to be BPTGIE.
Definitely.
But I like him in everything that I've seen him in. He's just like, he brightens my movie experience.
You brought up The Messenger.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson.
We've talked about this off mic. He's going to be a second ballot.
Yes. Once we do a second round, number 6 through 10, and that doesn't mean that they're worse. It's sort of like the Hall of Fame class, you know, with no logic behind it whatsoever.
Exactly.
But someday we'll do another. Once we come up with another five, like off mic, then maybe we'll do another round of it.
For sure.
So stay tuned for that. My number three of 2009 is Moon.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
I do not like the ending. I think that it's kind of, it's a letdown to me. But everything up until the end, up until then, great surprises. I love the homage to 2001. It's like the same font. It's like on the screens. There's like so much 2001 in there, but it's like, We're paying tribute to it, you know, it's very clear.
Yeah.
And it's just like weird surprises. And I can't get enough Sam Rockwell. He's another BPTGIE candidate, in my opinion, second ballot.
I could see it.
So I also have a soft spot, just like I do for journalism movies. I have a soft spot for sci-fi.
Two unhealthy relationship personal movies in your top five.
I'm following your bad example of going with personals rather than greatest.
No, it's a good example.
It's not good. Because Up is probably a greater movie. I mean, in my opinion, Up achieves certain things in a, you know, cohesive movie, whatever, that is probably makes it superior in some ways to those two that I just mentioned. But, you know, I didn't like it as much. So
it's not objective. We're not talking math.
It is. It should be. State of Play is four, Moon's three, A Serious Man is number two. We did an episode on it.
Yep.
I just, you know, I'll follow the Coen brothers around. I love the fact that they have this weird 18th century dark hut, you know, with a strange stabbing scene at the very beginning that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie and maybe. Yeah. Just so many mysteries. And my number one is Inglourious Basterds. That was like a very easy hammer down number one.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino just hits it.
Out of the park.
There's so many. I think I mentioned this in the episode that we did on it, but the first scene with Christoph Waltz, and he's going in this little French cottage, basically. The first time I saw it, I was like, this is Tarantino showing us that he can make a movie just like anybody else without any weirdness, without any, you know, any of his signature or whatever. And then he's going to get crazy and show us what, you know, what he can do. I know that's oversimplifying.
And it still has the Tarantino focus on dialogue so heavily. Yeah. Until,
there's a ton of dialogue in this movie.
Yeah. And it's got, there's just so much cinema there too, with looking at him through the window of the house, you know, just walking toward them. And then obviously when you go and see them underneath the floorboards.
Yep.
So beginnings of movies, would you take the beginning of Inglourious Basterds over the beginning of Up?
Ooh.
They're both probably about the same time.
I also loved the Serious Man intro.
Hmm. Okay. All right. If you want to throw that in, feel free.
Which again, just, I don't know, the kind of curveball setting me up and then the switch. They're all great. Probably out of those three, my favorite intro is probably Up, although it's so different from the others that it's hard to compare.
I know it's
the way that relationship in Up is developed without dialogue, and just like, it'll be like, you know, 2 seconds of 10 years passing. And just, it's great. It's movie magic.
Yeah. And they both work as short films, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
One honorable that we didn't mention yet. I won't go through the ones that we did mention. A Single Man. We did an episode on that
we
too.
Did mention
I did consider that in my five, and just a state of the horror union. Ton of horror movies came out this year. And I'm going to start with Coraline on that one because, as I've argued, Coraline is
it's not quite scary enough, but it's...
Oh, it's... That's a horror movie. And District 9 has horror elements in it, too. But you also had Thirst, a weird vampire movie that comes out this year. Jennifer's Body was great on rewatch.
So why aren't these make your top fives?
They're in my tens. But, you know, I can't. There's only so much.
Up in the Air is better than those movies?
Yeah, I put Up in the Air above him. I mean, like, Drag Me to Hell is one that I have a great time with. But, I mean, it's not meant to be taken seriously.
It's pure cheese. It's Sam Raimi, the overrated Sam Raimi. Director.
Whoa.
We'll do another episode on conflicting opinions on Sam Raimi.
Yeah, but a lot of good horror this year, too. Any honorables for you?
Basically the ones that we already talked about. I definitely think, Brothers and The Messenger are great. And, 500 Days of Summer was really good. there's a few things of trivia just on the ones that I liked that are in my top five. State of Play. I mean, it started out as a 6-hour series in Britain and was turned into a 2-hour movie for the US. So there's a lot of like angst about that among people who liked the movie. Brad Pitt and Edward Norton were going to be in it, and ended up with Russell Crowe and Ben Affleck, which, by the way, Russell Crowe is good in everything. Ben Affleck, I sort of am always scared that he's going to ruin the movie. What do you love, Ben Affleck?
When was the last movie he's ruined?
What movie has he elevated? I feel like he's just there.
I don't know. The Town, Argo, Good Will Hunting, Gone Girl. I mean, he's good in all of these movies.
Yeah.
The last movie that it was like Daredevil was what was, you know, that was the phase of like, oh boy, Ben Affleck. And really, that probably wasn't even his fault.
I don't really feel like those movies you just mentioned are like, jump out and say like, that's a great performance, but we'll see. We'll revisit some. In Moon, Duncan Jones was the director. He won the BAFTA for best directing debut. I don't know how many directing debuts are there to choose from, but Duncan Jones directed. Rolling Stone put Moon at number 23 in their top 40 sci-fi movies of the 21st century.
Oh, wow.
So some people liked it. To save on, so one of the guys who helped design the vehicles in Moon was Bill Pearson, who supervised the models for Alien. And to save on further production costs, Duncan Jones reused several set pieces from an abandoned movie based on the BBC sci-fi comedy Red Dwarf, which was never made. So I kind of like that idea that Moon is also using these like abandoned sets. There's something kind of
they're in a warehouse,
kind of romantic about
somewhere.
That.
You know, save some money, reduce, reuse, recycle. That's what I always say.
That's the best picture of this mantra, isn't it? okay, so what about
Kicks?
Oscar kicks.
All right. So I would kick... we need to talk about Avatar because it won for art direction and it won for visual effects. Okay, fine.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, fine.
What's wrong with that?
Okay, fine. It also won for best cinematography. So how do you feel about this? It was 60% CGI.
Yeah, I feel like...
I don't even know if it should have been eligible for cinematography, I feel like let alone win.
Visual effects sort of count as the weird camera angles you can do in CGI, but...
Yeah, if it wants to, you know... Special effects? Yes, I'm in. Art direction? Okay.
Cinematography implies that there's a camera involved.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I think that's
but there's
a little...
no camera involved. Well, there is. I mean, you're doing angles, but on a green screen.
Yeah,
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, so I think kick that from cinematography, which it won, and replace it with a single man. I think that also could have been nominated for art design or costuming. We don't normally talk about costuming.
Come on, it's a suit and tie.
You know, it's very, very period specific, which usually the Academy loves. They usually totally go for that, but there's probably not a big marketing budget
behind.
You're
going for pro Oscar mentality here.
I guess. I love Monique winning Best Supporting Actress, but I wouldn't have been upset if we got rid of Maggie Gyllenhaal in Crazy Heart.
Agreed.
And replace her with Julianne Moore, also from A Single Man.
Agreed. I think she was also better than... I mean, Vera Farmiga is good, but I think Julianne Moore was outstanding. So you can pick... You can take your pick of supportings to get rid of, but I think Julianne Moore probably could have even won it. Not just being nominated.
Yeah, and we don't normally talk about documentary, but Anvil, The Story of Anvil, wasn't nominated. Huh. Fantastic documentary.
Never heard of it before.
I would recommend it to anyone. Huh. Great music doc.
There's a great Anvil scene in Drag Me to Hell, if you recall.
Oh, I do recall. It's gold.
Which makes zero sense.
No, it's perfect. The eyeball flies.
There's an anvil.
Yes.
Attached to a rope that happens to be within arm's reach while she's being attacked.
It's in a shed where you keep your anvil.
Yeah.
You have to keep
it elevated.
Yeah.
You've got to
make
room.
The ceiling. Do you want it on the floor? Then you can't get your mower in. It doesn't make any sense. So you keep it suspended, and then it falls down like a Looney Tunes Acme.
Where do you get your anvils these days? I don't see them at Walmart.
You order them online. They deliver it to the house. And then it falls on like a zombie's head, and their eyeball flies, of course, into your mouth.
Into your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what is so hard to understand. Understand about this.
So the craziness and the whimsy of Up is kind of mirrored by the crazy whimsiness of Sam Raimi's horror.
I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
To me, Sam Rockwell could have been nominated for Best Actor. I am going to...
It's like a one-man show, that movie.
I have never even... Yeah, it is. And and he has these breakdowns that... There's a great range, and it's the back and forth. Yeah. Did you see Invictus? Have you ever seen Invictus?
Yeah, it's an inspiring football movie. That's
I haven't either, but I'm still going to kick Morgan Freeman, the great Morgan Freeman, from Best Actor to make room for Sam Rockwell, even though I've never even seen it. That's how little sense this episode makes. Woody Harrelson, I think, could have won Best Supporting Actor over Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds, even though he's good. But Woody Harrelson.
You're starting to lose me.
Come on, Woody Harrelson.
When you say kick Invictus, I'm with you. Kick Christoph Waltz?
He's good. He's good. But that performance from Woody Harrelson is fantastic. I also think that Tobey Maguire, okay, it's a little over the top sometimes, but I think that he could have been nominated for supporting actor. In the next episode, we will talk about the decade that was 2000 to 2009. We have completed this is a milestone for this podcast.
It really is.
So we will see you on the flip side.
You can find us on social media or wherever else you listen until then. And for all of the golden takes, head over to letterboxd.com/Mike Cavalieri.
All of them?
All of them.
To support the show, visit patreon.com/bestpicturethis.
Thanks to WNZF and the illustrious Mark Gilliland for producing. Also, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Best Picture This. And remember that the best picture of 2009 was Inglourious Basterds.
It's easy.